Box, box.
My COVID shot on Friday afternoon, and I was just feeling like wogey. You know, you're just gonna feel, I woke up Saturday and I was like, ugh. So I went down to my independent bookstore, the wonderful folks at Battenkill Books, and I picked up a big stack of books, and then I just got into a chair and I read like a fiend, and I just turned off all the TV and radio and didn't read any newspapers. And I wasn't happy about it, but it was fun to read. I will say that. So if you're in a similar boat, and maybe you'll need to be in a similar boat over the next several hours, days, weeks, then God help us, years, then, man, we've got a lot of choices for you, great books that you can think of picking up and have them take some of your time and attention away from what else is going on in your life. This morning we welcome two wonderful booksellers, dear friends to this program. Jim Havner is from Green Toad Bookstore in Oneonta, New York. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Just great.
Really good to have you here. James Conrad is from the Golden Notebook in Woodstock, New York. James, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Excellent. All right. Jim, let's begin with you.
Well, since we've been talking about politics, or you've been talking about politics for quite a while, I have a debut novel called Great Expectations by Vincent Cunningham. And it's a story about a young African-American man who works on the presidential campaign of an Illinois senator who became president a few years ago. And what's really kind of nice about this book is that he's really stirred by the rhetoric of the senator. And but still, at the same time, he's really kind of looking at what kind of compromises this person is going to have to make to actually try to win this presidency. And it kind of really relates back to him as a father, and also as his feelings about what is truth and what is not truth. And from someone working in a fictionalized account from being inside a presidential campaign, of someone that you really wanted to believe in. At the same time, the reality is that it changes constantly in that. So it's a political book, but still at the same time, it's hopeful. And of course, it was in the election of hope.
Vincent Cunningham is the author. Great Expectations is the name of the novel. All right, James, you're up.
I kind of want to different direction than you did when I was looking at my books to choose from, and in terms of considering political books, and I suddenly one just flew out to me that I had to just thought I'd start with, which is What I Ate in 1 Year by Stanley Tucci. It just felt really good to do that one instead. And basically, this book was suggested by his wife to basically for an entire year record what he ate for breakfast or lunch or dinner, whatever was significant each day of the year. And some chapters are just a paragraph or two, and some are half a dozen pages long. And one actually is just a list of all the reasons people love Harry Styles. And it's just a really fun book like that. And I'm not a foodie at all, but this, and my version of this book would be pretty dull. But he's, other than being a great actor, Tucci is this great cook and very onto the food scene. And he's very opinionated customer in restaurants, and he doesn't hold back when he doesn't like something, like a bland thing on a plane or a Cuban sandwich that is drowning in Dijon mustard from room service. But he doesn't name any of the restaurants when he doesn't like them, but he does name them when he loves them. So if you get to London or Italy soon, there's some really great restaurant recommendations in here. And I don't think they're the actually high expensive ones either. I think he tries to find kind of homey ones that are kind of more like that. The first 8 weeks of the book, he is in Rome filming Conclave. Did you guys see Conclave yet?
No, not yet. I want to.
Really good. Make sure you go see it. So there's a lot of Italy stuff with that going on. And when he does go on location to film, he'll stay in an Airbnb sort of hotel type of thing where it's all of his own kitchen. And he has them stock it all in advance. And then the first thing he does is he makes a a big bowl of sauce, because the nights he doesn't go out for dinner, he likes to just sit home and like make his own pasta with his own sauce and have that for his wonderful dinner. And he's crazy funny as a writer. I've never read him before, and I think that I didn't quite realize how much he is exactly like a lot of his characters he plays. He just has that really kind of snobby humor, but it's snobby with a heart to it. I don't know how he does that, because it's like you'd think you'd kind of be annoyed by him, but he's like that character in The Devil Wears Prada, the art director guy. Mm-hmm. And it's just very, very funny and dry, but yet he's never really trying to be mean at all. And anyways, the book has just a lot of dinners with other celebrities and some memories from his past with anecdotes about his first wife who died tragically rather young. And my favorite line in the book was, "I took a day off from exercising. I mean, how long do I really want to live?" So that was kind of my favorite part. And he goes to the gym a lot to make up for all the pasta he's eating, I think. So that's what I ate in 1 year.
There you go, by Stanley Tucci. Okay. Jim.
My next book is another piece of fiction by one of my favorite writers, Susan Minot, Don't Be a Stranger. She wrote that great book, Evenings, a number of years ago. And to get away from politics, this is a novel about erotic obsession. And this it's a story about a woman who is a single mother, and she's 52 years old, and she meets a man 18 years younger than her. Is immediately taken with him. And it's beautifully written, it really kind of captures this kind of sense of what longing is, an obsession. And of course, she's kind of challenged by the ex-husband, who she still gets along with the children, her parents, her friends, about being with this younger man. So it's this idea of trying to discover yourself, but still at the same time seeing something that's really powerful to you. Everybody else just is looking at the age and what is acceptable in that. So very nicely written, very lyrical. Don't Be a Stranger, Susan Minot.
I read that. It's a really – actually, she's going to be in an upcoming book show, but a really a fine novel and a lot of fun and goes in some really interesting places. Great ending, too. Mm. I'm
Do I give it away?
No, I was just about to say I like novels that have good endings, and they're harder to find than they should be. But regardless, that was a really good one, James.
I'm glad to actually. I'm a big fan of hers. I haven't read this yet, so I'm definitely will
it's good stuff.
Give that a read. All right, my next book, Every Valley: The Desperate Lives and Troubled Times That Made Handel's Messiah by Charles King. This is the story of the creation of Handel's Messiah. Which is the most performed, let's call it, musical of all time. There's two great things I love about a really good nonfiction book, and one is where it'll take like a historical artifact, like in this case the Messiah, and it'll explain it within the context of the times, which is in this case England of the mid-18th century. And the other thing I love about a great nonfiction book is if it'll read like a page-turning novel. So if you're kind of like an Eric Larson fan, Devil in the White City and all that, this is the type of nonfiction book that just reads like with characters and all that, and that you just keep forgetting that you're actually reading nonfiction. Handel was German, and at a young age, though, he went to Italy, where he learned how to perfect his talents in the Italian operas. But then he was drawn to London and the patronage of the English royalty. And by the time he made it to England, he was already kind of a classical music like rock star in a way. And he did this amazing job of juggling how to be popular with the masses, but also to specifically kind of keep the royal court happy. And then he also had to work hard to keep the production costs of his operas low, because they wouldn't get performed if they would go up too high, because they were big extravagant affairs. So he's kind of a bit of a businessman like that, too. Another part of this history is that the Messiah, along with pretty much all arts in England at that time, were patroned. So in other words, they were kind of paid for by the English slave trade. And King goes into that in the book, where he actually follows the life of a slave that goes all the way across the Atlantic in the British transatlantic slave industry, ends up back in London, and it becomes free. And so he covers all that part in the book, too. It's not a religious book, even though the entire libretto is actually directly lifted from the King James Bible. But it's a thorough history of the people that created the Messiah and the success. It actually didn't have a big success in his lifetime. So it's funny that after that, it became one of the biggest, most popular things in classical music ever. And King does a really great job of just telling the entire story that created it.
The name of the book is Every Valley, The Desperate Lives and Troubled Times That Made Handel's Messiah. A fascinating topic. All right, Jim.
This is next book is another novel, Munichs, by David Peace, an English writer. I never had really read him before. He's written quite a bit. But I had a friend of mine working on my house this summer, and anyway, he listened to soccer all the time, which I've never listened to, you know. So these soccer matches would be, you know, blasting out of his radio while he was working on the house. And this story is about United Manchester soccer team in 1958, and this is a true story. The team was on a plane leaving Munich, and it crashed, and I think 23 members of the team were killed. And it's a story about how a country is united behind a team. And it talks about the sorrow and the struggles that brought out of this tragedy and that. And he really talks about how we deal with trauma. And it's a fictionalized account, but you hear hear about the crash from the people that were in it, fictionalized the course of that, of the families, of the nation itself. And it's set in late 50s England, which is kind of going through its thing after World War II. But it's very, very precise in what grief and sorrow is really about to multiple people, multiple levels of society, and nicely written, really nicely written.
Munich by David Peace. Excellent. James.
Actually, I want to read that, too. I think I have a copy buried at home somewhere that I got in advance of months ago. My next one is Our Evenings by Alan Hollinghurst, also historical and British. So when I first went into business with the Golden Notebook and met Jackie, one thing we immediately had in common is that we love Alan Hollinghurst. And this is kind of remarkable because he's a British author, puts out a book every, like, half a dozen years, and they all get nominated for the Booker, of course, and one actually won for Line of Beauty. But he's not exactly like an author that you just immediately would have meet somebody and be like, oh yeah, we both love him. But he's well deserved of it, though. His latest one is called Our Evenings, and it's like a lot of his other books, it's historical and covers a lot of British queer life. And in this one, it's along the same lines, where it's a story of two men who initially meet at school, and they're sort of on opposite sides of the tracks. And the main character, Dave Wynn, who is gay, but he also deals with a life of prejudice by being half Burmese. And he's at school on a scholarship that's funded by the family of the other main character, who he meets as a boy, who's actually more of a bully. And then the novel then follows their two very different paths in life as they sort of interact in various times over the course of the next few decades. For the character of Wynn, his life, it's life where gay liberation is finally coming to England as he's getting into adulthood. And so his life is mirrored by society's acceptance of him as well as he's accepting himself finally. It's a really big book, but it's that gorgeous Hollinghurst writing, so it'll keep you going all the way throughout it. And we're doing it for our November book club. And we're like 10 years old now with our book club. So if you have interest in joining our book club, we do it live and also on Zoom. We're doing it two times now because we can't do it simultaneous Zoom and live because it got too crazy with people talking over each other all the time and it was a nightmare. So now we're doing two meetings, but it's much, much better. But contact our store if you'd like to get on our email list for our Zoom stuff for our book club. It's a lot of fun. We do a lot of great books all year long.
Great. The name of the new book by Alan Hollinghurst is Our Evenings. Okay.
I have new work of nonfiction, and this is something that I've heard about, but I never paid any attention. It's called Opus, The Cult of Dark Money, Human Trafficking, and the Right-Wing Conspiracy Inside the Catholic Church by Gareth Gore. Gore is a journalist, and in 2017, he was assigned to look at the implosion of a Spanish bank, Banco Popular. And when he got into the investigation of this, he found out that there were many members of Opus Dei. I don't know if you probably know who that is, but it's an ultra-conservative Catholic group within the Catholic Church who are very right-wing and very traditional, and they have members of the priesthood in the thing, and they fund quite a bit of un-Christian activities throughout the world, and anyway, it's just a really great book of investigative journalism, and really kind of opens up of this idea. And Opus Dei is, you know, very, very, very involved in our country, and of course was very involved in the Supreme Court decision in Roe versus Wade and that there. So.
Opus by Gareth Gore is the name of the book. All right, James.
I wanted to do a kid's book. I'm going to do a Jenny and the Cat Club, which is written and illustrated by Esther Averill. So I wanted to do a kid's book, and so I asked my very long-term kids manager, Gail, at my store, who's been there actually over 40 years, what was new that I could promote for kids. And she said she would actually like me to do something that's old. And she likes to really focus on a lot of old books that are, she can still put face out in the kids section and they'll sell like crazy. And so this one is Jenny and the Cat Club. It was originally published in 1944. Averill was an illustrator at Women's Magazines, and she lived in Greenwich Village on McDougal Street. And she was inspired by seeing her neighbor's cat coming out of the window into the back garden on a daily basis. And so she wrote and illustrated a whole series of books about this cat that she named Jenny Linsky. And the drawings are very simple black and white with usually just a single color dash in them. And it's usually the cat's red scarf, or sometimes it's a red ball or a red balloon. But when you look at these illustrations longer, you start to see how much personality she conveys in just very simple sketches. And they almost seem like they were meant for adults to enjoy more, because you can kind of be taken by the simplicity of it. But the stories are really great for reading aloud for ages 3 to 7. They involve Jenny getting the courage to join a cat club that meets in Washington Square Park. Or when she gets more adventurous in another story, she goes to a party and she loses her scarf in another story. But you can really see why adults would enjoy reading these with children. And there's even a section that you can sing aloud with them too. This is all brought to you by the New York Review of Children's Collection imprint, which is focused on actually reprinting classic old books in beautiful formats. Another one is called Everything Under a Mushroom by Richard Krauss, with illustrations by Margot Tomes. But anyways, look for these or get your sword out of them. They're really lovely.
Excellent. Good stuff. Jenny and the Cat Club. All right, Jim.
Well, I got another kind of... a downer book. You guys have some really nice, fun books, James. But
I'll do a downer after this.
You're making me feel bad.
I'll do a downer, too.
No. This is Stolen Pride, Lost Shame, and the Rise of the Right by Arlie Russell Hochschild. He wrote, of course, Strangers in Your Own Land, which is a really wonderful book. But this is a story about Pikeville, Kentucky. And of course, it's in the poorest congressional district and the whitest congressional district in America, or the second poorest congressional district in America on that. So he really is kind of looking at pride, the idea of pride. And of course, this book is set in Appalachia. You know, the coal mills have shut up, you know, there's just intense poverty. Of course, a drug epidemic comes into town and that. But what's really wonderful about this book is that he really interviews these men in this community. And he really gives them voice in their own way of really talking about what has happened in their lives. And how they feel about it. Another aspect takes on in this book is that there was a white racist parade, and that was kind of the impetuous to have the March for the Right parade that happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, within the next year and that. But I think it's really wonderful to look. It really looks at men who are in an economic geographic place and really gives them voice. And never says whether or not you're right or left or this type of thing. There isn't really a lean to it. It's a really true kind of rendering of what's going on in America.
Stolen Pride, Arlie Russell Hochschild, and we actually have an interview that we did during the fun drive, the Lockbox mm-hmm. specials with Arlie, and it's very good, fascinating book, and a really interesting discussion. James.
Okay. I will go for doing The Message by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Mm. This is the latest short nonfiction book from Coates. The last was Between the World and Me, which was his riveting long essay about growing up a black man in America and how he had to teach that experience to his children. The Message starts out with an essay about writing and reading, and it's an essay that will definitely resonate with people who love books, whether they read them, write them, or sell them, or all three of them, because he recalls the first times in his youth where the experience of a book and the words like thoroughly moved him, and how thrilling that was and unforgettable it was. He can actually remember every like sensual detail of that moment, and that how that takes you through your whole life with like reading books and having books as a part of your life. The second essay is his trip to Africa, which is his attempt to bond with the place where his ancestors were forced from slavery to America. But it's an opportunity for him to employ this journalistic method he tries to do, which is he tries for his belief that a writer must really experience his subject by really going to the place and talking to the people there and then trying to analyze his own emotional response to it. But the most important part of the book that of the message that people are talking about the most, of course, is the very long essay on traveling to Israel and Palestine. And the trip was motivated by an essay he wrote a few years before, which was The Case for Reparations Regarding American History of Slavery. In the essay, he used Germany as an example of giving reparations to Israel. And he basically regretted what he wrote because he wrote it in a way that didn't specify that he didn't mean for a state to give another state reparations. It should have gone more to the personal descendants of the members of the survivors of the Holocaust. The essay is controversial. He makes a mistake of not really mentioning Hamas or October 7th, but there's a lot of good stuff in it that you should check out and get some of the message from Coates.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, The Message. All right, 2 minutes and two books. Go ahead.
2 minutes and two books. I got the this book called The Best Lamb by Susan A. Brewer. I think I actually did this book the last time I was here. But anyway, I'll do it again. And it was at the end as well.
Rerun, Mike.
So anyway, it's a story about upstate New York. It's about two families. It's about Susan Brewer's family, who came to upstate New York and occupied land owned by the Oneida Mohawk family or nation, and then Polly Denny, Oneida Mohawk family, and it follows these two families through this mid 1700s all the way up to today, and what's the central focus about this is that the love of the land. In both groups, both families have a love of the land. Brewer's family farms this farm for 250 years. And so anyway, I think using the metaphor of land and how different people bring meaning to it and who actually, what is ownership of the land is really kind of the central focus of her book. And that it's very good upstate nonfiction.
The Best Land by Susan Brewer. James, do you want to end with a book or with telling us about events that are
Let
coming
me just
up?
Quickly just tell you a couple events. Two events for November. One is the wonderful Oliver Radcliffe. I talked about his memoir, Frighten the Horses, last time I was on here. It was his journey of coming out queer late in life and then transitioning to being a man. We're teaming up with the Kingston LGBTQ Community Center to launch this, which we're hoping is going to be a Queer Voices author series. And that'll be on November 16th at 4 p.m., and he'll be in conversation with Holden Zeidlitz. And on Sunday, November 24th at 2 p.m. at St. Gregory's Church in Woodstock, we're continuing our series of Gail Straub's books, Spirituality and Consciousness, and this is with the family Strand, Clark Strand, Perdita Strand, and Sophie Strand. All amazing authors. They'll be signing books in conversation with Gail and reading from them. It'll be great. It's on, November 24th at 2 p.m.
November 24th at 2 p.m. You can find information about all these books and about all these events and all kinds of cool stuff by going to their websites, goldennotebook.com and greentoadbookstore.com. Jim and James, you're the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.